Another Dollop of Dribble from a Pie Town, Ireland, featuring Neil O'Carroll and me, Joanne Farrell.
Days or so that have passed since I last spoke to you, a lot has happened. Let's see, I went for an eye test and I got a letter saying it's important to note that following your eye appointment you may be unable to drive, please make alternative arrangements. Now that's as far as I'm concerned. If you go to get your eyes tested and you're able to drive when you get there and you're not able to drive when you leave, that's they're doing you a disservice. They're worsening your eyesight. You're going to end up, you know, you can't get home, you have to get a bus home. They're just going, it's obviously a ploy to try and get your car off you. You leave it there and they clamp it and they send it off somewhere and have it broken down and melt the metal and reform it into some sort of medical equipment that they don't have the funding for. And I suppose it's out of desperation they have to do it. These hospitals, they have to raise extra money and get extra resources. And if it means melting down your car, then I suppose I have to say I'm okay with that. I may benefit from the medical equipment as a user of their hospital. I benefited from their vending machine last Friday. I got a can of Coca-Cola out of it, and it was absolutely fucking beautiful. Coca-Cola is one of the finest foods known to mankind. It's made out of some sort of vegetable extracts according to the ingredients, and a lot of people wonder what those vegetable extracts are. Well, frankly, it's none of your business. I mean, it what goes on in that factory behind closed doors is something that you don't need to know about. You don't work there, and you don't. If you want to know what the raw ingredients are in a bottle of cola, you make the cola yourself. If you're such a control freak, I for one am quite happy to buy the stuff straight from the shop. As long as I know it wasn't made in some sort of sweatshop or something, because I don't want perspiration in my drink, even if it's nice and cold and has been chilled in the fridge for the appropriate time period. I'd rather not have sweat in it. I'd imagine the sweat tastes bad, although I've never tasted it. But you know, even if it doesn't taste bad, I suppose they've probably got some sort of additives they can put into it to make it taste proper. But still, if I saw it in the ingredients, it would be a bit of a turn off, and I think I'd probably switch to Pepsi. These cola drinks, when they started, they were considered medical treatments, a bit like cornflakes and Coca-Cola were both medical treatments they used to give in hospitals. Coca-Cola used to restore your something or other after some sort of operation, and cornflakes is pretty much the same. It was good for your digestion or something, or there was nutrients and other sorts of crap in it. If people are a bit obsessed with nutrients, you don't need to. We're not plants, you know. We don't need to be watered and fed every day. We're machines, you know. Our legs move because of kinetic energy. They don't move because you spilled some coffee on it and the caffeine went in through your skin and somehow powered your muscles. That's not the case at all. Now, as I finished saying that, I just realised that my mug of coffee here is empty. Which means technically it's no longer a mug of coffee. It's just a mug of emptiness. A mug of air, I suppose. The air is ever changing. Actually, that would be an excellent invention if someone could come up with it. If you have a mug of air, the air is constantly moving in and out and changing. So every few seconds, effectively, you have a fresh mug of air. If you could do it the same with coffee, and have it so that every few seconds there's a fresh mug of coffee, it just flows in from the space around you like the air does, then you could have no need for flasks or for reheating your coffee or anything. You could pretty much have your own personal mug of coffee that just you just keep throughout your entire life, and sip away every few seconds or whenever you feel like it, or leave it on your bedside table at night and still be fresh in the morning. And I think that would be a great invention. Inventors don't know what they're doing. They come up with all this crap, like four-legged tables that fold up so you can fold them into some sort of a board that leans against your wall, and then you hide it behind a sofa or something. But when you've got people coming who you don't want to know, you have a table, and these stupid bloody letter boxes that your cat can climb into, and they call that a cat flap or something. That's a disgusting name for an invention. The patent office should not have allowed that. I mean, there has to be some standards. I mean, the censors office wouldn't allow that sort of thing. If you made a film called the Pussycat Flap, I can tell you that it would at least get a 21 cert, and no one would be allowed to see it. But inventors do that when they invent some sort of a simple device for your door, and yeah, they go, oh yeah, call it a cat flap. Why don't you go the hallway and call it call it a vagina mansion or something, I don't know. I mean, Jesus Christ. But yeah, and then there's inventors in the transport industry. They don't know what they're doing at all. I mean, they invent carts, and they invent these animals that are supposed to pull the carts, and that goes fine for many centuries, and people get around fine. But then they decide, no, the animal's no good. You have to have a machine attached to the cart, and that's ridiculous. It makes the cart a lot heavier, and it needs wheels now, and it needs an engine to pull it along, because it's got all this extra machinery on it. And the horse didn't have that at all. The horse just had to drag its own belly and its legs, and pretty much the weight of its own skeleton and fat, and some hay on the back of Harris, and maybe some coal for its engines. But it didn't have all this weight to pull. That's why it didn't need an engine. Then what happened was someone invented the train. Now the train is a ridiculous device. It's where you cram hundreds of people onto this big long vehicle, and they can only go where there's rails. Obviously that's ridiculous. If you've got a train and you want to go to the shop, you better be damn sure you've got another 400 people who want to go to the same shop and who live pretty near you, or who live somewhere along your route. Otherwise, you're going to lose a lot of money on the trip, and that's why you've got bicycles and cars. I mean, you're much better off having a car where you can just put yourself and your family in it, and you only have the cost of the four or five people to get to the shop and back, and you don't have to worry about whether there's going to be a profit or whether the government's going to fund your new route to the convenience store. You just damn well get on and go wherever you like, and that's the way transport was always meant to be. It was never meant to be these big, huge, long things that go from one end of the country to the other, and called roads, and with trains going along them. And the whole idea of transport was originally to transport hay from one side of the country to the other, so it could be used to power horses who would run short trips. And the idea was when your horse got healthy enough and had enough nutrition inside him and got nice and fat and healthy, then he'd be able to start running the trains himself from one end of the country to the other, and he'd transport the hay, and that would be the payback. That would be how he'd pay the nation back for feeding him and educating him as a young mare or foal or whatever you call it. It's the same idea on which the education system was formed. You spend the first 15 years of your life being educated and not putting anything into the economy, and that's quite natural. We educate you, and we turn you into a young man or woman who's intelligent and who knows a bit about life, and then you go into a factory and work and contribute yourself. You make Coca-Cola for a start, and you make other foodstuffs, and you make furniture, and you make everything that we need for our schools, for our young people. And that's the circle of life. It's a bit like the Disney film. Of course, the Disney film was made in a factory in Thailand by 12-year-olds who weren't attending school. But that's all allegedly, and I don't think any of that is true at all. I think you can't go around making allegations like that. Because you just end up accidentally switching off the microphone for a minute like this, and then switching it back on again, and that'll get you nowhere. Now, that previous segment was a particular disappointment to me, because I'd come up with some what I thought was a clever thing, whereby I would switch off the microphone halfway through a sentence and then switch it on again a few seconds later during a sentence in which I spoke about accidentally turning off the microphone. And while it wasn't the greatest comedy material ever written, I thought it would be reasonably entertaining. I mean, it's not like you have anything else to do with your life. It would pass a few minutes of your time on a Saturday morning and keep you going for a while until it was breakfast. Because I realise you're all on diets and you're all trying to hold off your breakfast this morning for as long as you possibly can, and try to maybe not have it till about 1 or 2 p.m. and then you'll be able to keep going through the afternoon till dinner time. And I understand that myself. It's 10:20 on a Saturday morning as I speak, and this morning I had two Weetabix, two bowls of crunchy nut cornflakes, and I tried a bowl of fruit and fibre, but it was absolutely disgusting. It tasted like horse shit, and if there's one thing I don't want in my breakfast, it's horse shit. But as I say, I do understand your dietary needs, and to kind of consider this program to be nutrition for your brain. Now, admittedly, it's more popcorn than caviar, but I mean, what do you expect for free? I mean, caviar isn't free, neither is popcorn for that matter, but you're getting this crap free down onto your iPod. And I'm even going to put in a picture of a cat with the show this time, so as you speak, as you look at your iPod, you'll be able to see a picture of a cat on your iPod. If you're not a cheapskate, you'll have a colour iPod and you'll be able to see what colour my cat is. I don't know which cat I'm going to put in the album cover yet. I think the new one, Pippi. Pippi, by the way, has turned out to be a girl, and the way we found this, well, never mind how we found this out, but it was an immense disappointment to us. We really wanted two boy cats. When I say boy, I don't mean bisexual, I mean two cats who are boys, spelled B-O-Y-S. Not that either of them can spell that. I mean, that's the irony of all this. We give all these cat labels and names to cats, and cats haven't a clue what any of this means. I could say to Harry, "Here, Harry, come here, Harry, here, Harry, here, Harry." And you'll say, "Oh, that's an interesting noise. I wonder what it means. Now, where's my litter tray?" And it's all a waste of time, really, this whole cat ownership thing. Now, I've just listened back to the previous segment and what I just said. Apparently I said that this whole cat ownership thing is a waste of time. I don't think that was me who said that. I wouldn't say a thing like that. Cat ownership is one of the most rewarding hobbies known to mankind. I've been a cat owner since the age of 4, with a space of 20 years, during which I had no cats, of course, but apart from that, I've always been a cat owner. And I can tell you, once you've had a cat, there's no going back. Our cats guard the house to keep the place well guarded, and we never have any problems with burglars or with junk mail or any other sort of crap, because cats just don't care about that stuff. They don't answer the door, and if a burglar comes in, they just sit there at the telly and as if they see the burglar, but they're, "Nah, I don't care." And the burglar gets all freaked out and they say, why isn't that cat panicking? Why isn't it running and to call the cops or something? Why is it just ignoring me?" And then the burglar decides to just leave because he just doesn't know what the hell to do. And that's why cats are absolutely fucking fantastic. And then, of course, when they die, you can eat them or feed them to your dog. Our dog's name is Chico, and he's about 2 years old. He hasn't eaten any cats yet. He hasn't had a chance. He's come near enough. Harry ran out into the garden at one stage and got chased by Chico, and losing within 2 inches of being Chico's dinner, and that would have been pretty cool. And well, wouldn't, because we like Harry, we don't really want him to be eaten by a dog. Well, not in that way, not in the way that he wouldn't enjoy. But some people, of course, enjoy being eaten. They have a kind of a fantasy thing about being absorbed into another human being, but that's a different thing entirely.
Hello, my name is Joanne Farrell. I'm here for Into Your Head Adult Learning Programme. My lecture today is entitled An Introduction to Cannibalism. Welcome to a course that's been specially tailored to suit the interests of Into Your Head's listeners. If you like eating people, or even just biting them, you'll love the fine art of cannibalism. Cannibalism was once a highly respected hobby. It involved rolling cannonballs along a long track and trying to knock over some skittles at the other end. I suppose in the way it was quite similar to what people nowadays know as bowling. Cannonballism, as it was known at the time, soon evolved into something much more sophisticated. Or something much more violent. Whatever. Anyway, one night, during a particularly long game, one of the participants was waiting around for his turn, and absent-mindedly began chewing on one of the balls. A huge roar of agony went up all over the place, and he lost all his teeth. The inventor, Trevor Bailiff, just happened to be watching at the time, and he came up with a wonderful idea. What if the balls were made more chewy? You could prevent bored cannonballism enthusiasts from hurting their teeth on their balls. And not only that, you could make sure they got all the carefully measured nutrients and vitamins that all serious sports enthusiasts require. Unfortunately, he was too busy inventing some sort of wind-up radio at the time, so he never got round to doing anything about it. So, the cannonball players became pale and thin, and developed an insatiable hunger that could only be satisfied by eating a packet of Tato crisps, a popular Irish snack, from the vending machine. One day, one of them was using the vending machine when the bag of crisps behind the glass failed to fall from its slot, like it's supposed to when you put the coins in. So, he put his hand and arm in through the flap at the bottom and tried to free his snack, which was rightly his because he had, after all, put his coins in. Sadly, his arm got stuck and became disconnected from his shoulder, and the next person who came along and put in his €2 got, to his surprise, an arm and a hand, rather than the packet of cheese and onion flavoured crisps which the H4 button is supposed to get you. Anyway, it all turned out okay, because the hand and arm tasted quite nice, and he shared it out among his friends, and they all became cannibals, and that's how it all started. Human flesh tastes a lot like chicken, by the way. That's because chickens, contrary to popular myths, do not spend their days chewing corn. They eat people. That's why people are so reluctant to work in free-range chicken farms. One of the downsides of cannibalism is that the person who gets eaten rarely survives. It's a real shame, but someday medical science will hopefully invent a cure for being eaten. It's not the chewing that's the problem. It's the digestive juices that attack you when you enter a person's stomach. You drown in them, and once you start to drown, it becomes irresistible. And you can't go back.
Irresistible?
It's a bit like falling in love, but more violent. A much less harmful cousin of cannibalism is biting. As practiced proudly by vampires, except by the Count of Sesame Street, who is a little self-conscious and prefers to do it in private when he isn't being stared at by several preschool children and giant yellow bird. Biting can be very nice, although it does tickle sometimes and it can cause the person you're eating to shout, "Ow!" in a sudden yelp because it hurts. But at least you come out of it alive, and it's an experience, isn't it? Where was I? Oh, well, eating people is all very well, but what do you do if somebody tries to eat you? First of all, you try to look unappetizing. Cover yourself in a particularly unpleasant mustard, or too much salt. I hate mustard. One thing you should never do is chew your own flesh. This only serves to tenderize you and make you more appetizing to any passing would-be cannibalist. If you do decide to eat somebody for lunch, here are some tips and serving suggestions. Always serve human flesh with tea, not coffee. Otherwise, people are going to think you are uncivilized. Remember to ask your meal to bathe before you begin preparation. 20 minutes per pound at 400 degrees Fahrenheit, top shelf of the oven. If you're not sure which bit you are supposed to remove, ask your butcher to do it for you. And remember, a lot of people think they don't like feet until they try them. Don't be afraid to try out new things. Life's too short. And that's about all I can tell you about how to eat people. Bon appetit! And remember, red wine, not white. If you have any questions about today's lecture, please make your way to the guestbook at intoyourhead.com. I have been Joanne Farrell, and that was your first lecture. Thank you.
Now, when I finished my last sentence in this podcast, I was talking to you from Dublin, the capital of the Republic of Ireland. I've now changed countries. I'm in Belfast, the capital of Northern Ireland, which technically is in a different country. This is all in the interest of spontaneity. I don't want you, the whole listener, to get bored of me broadcasting from the same place all the time. Anyway, that was several hours ago in Dublin, and I decided not to edit out the intervening several hours, as you wouldn't really have heard anything if I wasn't going to record a 6-hour car trip, especially not the bits where I stopped off to go to the toilet and stuff. I mean, that would have been just disgusting. Anyway, I find myself here in Belfast, and this is the city that was at war with itself for many years, it's like a different world here. On the way into the city, we were held up by two separate marches. People love to march around Belfast. They take their musical instruments with them, their bagpipes or whatever, and they just march along the middle of the road. They don't care. Cars come second in the city. So we found ourselves driving along at a snail's pace behind a load of bagpipe people with drums and things, making a lot of noise and looking like they were enjoying themselves very much. And there was a load of other people standing on the curb staring at them, and some of them looking a little displeased and some of them looking a little overpleased with the whole thing. We just decided to look neutral. I don't believe you have to express a facial opinion on everything you see just to show off. I mean, I know nature designed the face to give an outward impression of your personality to others for the purposes of mating and other things. But I don't want to mate with a bagpipe band. I mean, no offence. I've noticed that every bloody country in the world thinks they're the only people who have bagpipes. They have them up here now, and they go around screeching and making noises with them. We have one in the Republic of Ireland. It's called an Illan pipe, Illan being the Irish for elbow, and you blow into it just like any other bagpipe. It's just there's particular concentration on the fact that you put the bag under your elbow and squeeze it with your elbow, and they think they're great. They have the same thing in Scotland, and they decide, oh, the Scottish are the only people in the world who have bagpipes, and then in Poland they have natural bagpipes. It's a live cat, and you can do that when you have five-legged cats. It's much easier. You blow into it and you move the legs around just like you would on a standard bagpipe. Now, which reminds me, as a result of the last podcast, I found myself being accused in the guest book at www.intoyourhead.com of being cruel to my cat, Harry. And as far as I'm concerned, it's my cat. I'll be cruel to it if I like. If I want to hit my cat over the head with an axe, I'll damn well do it, as long as it's within the laws of the jurisdiction in which I am at the time. I mean, I'm obviously not going to break any of the rules and regulations that my country lays down for me. I'm a law-abiding citizen, but just to make that clear, I'll do whatever I like with my cats, and no damn cheesy or is going to come along and stop me. If anyone has a problem with that, they can go and make their presence felt in the guest book. Well, I'm not having any of that shite. You can expect a reply from me there, and I'll make you look like an idiot. I can tell you, you can't go around issuing instructions to people about their cats. I mean, there are boundaries that you can't cross. A cat is like somebody's child, and I have two children. One of them is 4 weeks old, the other one is about 9 weeks old. There wasn't much of a gap between them, but you know, we're a young couple, and you know, that sort of thing happens when you're enthusiastic and lively, and you end up with two cats. Anyway, that's about it from Belfast. Thank you for listening, and good night.
If you would like to comment on any of the issues raised in today's programme, visit the Stalkers Forum guestbook at our website, intoyourhead.com, or email us at studio@intoyourhead.com. Remember, we value the opinions of you, the humble and ignorant listener.